Rainbow colors streak across shapes as they slide into place to form A24. In a magnified view of various strands, neon letters read DNA. Titles appear. A24 presents a DNA Films production. A blurry orange curtain partially covers a glass balcony door, affording a view of a gray cityscape across a river. In the kitchen, a woman with short brown hair stares off while leaning against a counter. She flinches, breaking from her stupor. As the perspective recedes, she starts forward. A small blood stain marks her nose. Stepping from the kitchen, she enters the living room, which is bathed in a warm orange glow. She stops by the billowing curtain and pulls the balcony door closed. She stares through the rain-flecked glass.
The words I have to say may well be simple.
In slow motion, a bearded man plummets feet first past her view. As he falls, he locks eyes with the woman, who stares back, her lips parted.
Until you give your love,
now, a close view focuses on a cottony dandelion. A breeze blows the white spores from the stem and sends them flying off. A wide perspective shows the spores blowing past a remote field covered in dandelions, some blooming with yellow flowers. Beyond stand several cottages in disrepair. Seen from behind, a late-model blue hatchback drives down an expressway. The woman sits behind the wheel, situated on the right side. The paved roadway curves up ahead.
Have your eyes really seen?
Now the car coasts along a narrow strip of road, cutting through the lush woodland landscape.
You say it's very hard to leave behind the life we knew.
The woman glances at the scenery, a curious smile touching her lips.
But there's no other way, and now it's really up to you.
The vehicle proceeds toward a grouping of quaint Tudor buildings before turning past a low stone wall.
Love is the key we must turn. Truth is the flame.
Steering into another turn, it passes through the open entrance gates of an estate. The hatchback proceeds along a narrow thoroughfare between stone cottages. It stops on a circular gravel drive. Beyond a pair of tall hedgerows stands a weathered manor house. The woman sets the parking brake and unbuckles her seatbelt. She opens her door and steps outside, clad in a turtleneck sweater and casual pants. Hands in her pockets, she passes between two brick post lamps, then a pair of tall hedgerows. She pauses, taking in her surroundings. Against a blurry background, a pair of apples on a tree branch appear in sharp focus. Fallen fruit lies scattered around the tree. The woman steps over, reaches up, and plucks an apple. She studies the fruit closely, then brings it to her mouth. She closes her eyes while chewing. Seen from a distance, a man peers through a ground floor window of the house, then steps away. The woman ambles past an array of low, manicured hedges encircling a fountain. Stopping at the front door, she uses the knocker. The jowly, floppy-haired man answers with a grin.
Hello.
Hello.
Mrs. Marlowe, yes?
Harper, yes.
Wonderful. Geoffrey.
Hi.
Do, come in.
Thank you.
Was it a hellish drive?
No, not at all.
Oh, good. M4 can be beastly. M4, dreadful chore. That's what we used to say.
Well, it's a beautiful house.
Yeah, nearly 500 years old, in part.
He taps a beam.
What a thought, eh? Shakespeare. What pre?
Harper peeks into a room.
Look, you must have bags.
Sorry.
You must have bags. Put it in the car? Why don't I bring them in?
Oh, I can help.
Oh, no, absolutely not. No, you make yourself comfortable. The kettle's boiled, kitchen just through there, tea in the cupboard, milk in the fridge. Just where you'd expect to find them.
Great.
Won't be a jiffy.
Apple in hand, Harper shuffles down a hallway leading to the kitchen. She gazes around at the white cabinetry and sets her apple down on a black, marble-topped kitchen island. Spying a countertop kettle, she touches it, then flips a control switch. She sweeps her gaze around the spacious kitchen, the cookware arranged tidily above the oven. She passes a hutch filled with chinaware on her way into a glass-walled conservatory. Framed through a tall door, she peers out at the garden beyond. Burdened with baggage, Jeffrey returns and drops something.
Shit.
Can I help?
No problem.
He leaves some luggage at the foot of a staircase and ascends with the rest. Harper prepares tea and sets the kettle on the burner. Jeffrey brings her bags.
Gosh, broken my sweat. Started to wish I'd let you help. Still, I expect you need it all. It's 2 weeks you've got the place, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Oh, you found the tea. Jolly good.
He points to the kitchen island.
Apple from the garden?
Yeah, it was delicious.
Scrumping, eh? No. Mustn't do that. Forbidden fruit.
Oh. God, sorry, I'm joking.
He flashes a toothy grin.
Have as many as you like. Make chutney. They only fall to the ground and spoil. Next thing you know, the place is full of wasps. Shall I show you around?
Yeah.
He leads her into a hallway.
Let's start with the ground floor. Drawing room. Now, not the best reception on the telly. It's a bit patchy when it's raining. Don't know why. Fireplace is good to go. Oh, and if you run out of wood, there's stacks more in the shed. Moving into the piano room.
He taps some keys.
Do you play the piano?
No.
Oh. Me neither. Oh, let me show you the dining room. Good for a slap-up Sunday roast. The cloakroom, coats, brollies, wellies, blah, blah, blah. But obviously, try not to walk mud through the house. Upstairs. Up the wibbly-wobbly way. Little uneven, but hold your nerve. Doo-doo-doo-doo. Clean towels, plenty of soap, and a good big tub for soaking after a long walk. Only thing... Sorry, I have to say it. Ladies, do watch what you flush.
Right. Yep.
Septic tank, you see. Can't go.
He twitches another toothy grin.
Oh, let's say no more.
She follows him from the bathroom.
And finally, ta-da, the master bedroom.
Wow.
Wonderful view, isn't it?
She crosses to a window.
Right, see the church spire over the trees? That's the village. A stone's throw. Got a nice pub, if you're interested. 10-minute walk there, 30-minute walk back. clean sheets and so forth. And, will it just be you staying? Or?
Yeah, it's just me.
Where's hubby?
Harper turns.
Excuse me?
Mrs. Marlowe, no?
Yeah, no. No, it isn't. I haven't changed it yet. The missus. Or the surname.
Oh.
He awkwardly lowers his gaze.
Well done, Jeffrey.
Oh, please, it's fine.
Downstairs.
Wi-Fi password and all that mumbo-jumbo is in the welcome pack on the piano. Ah, key. Key to the castle. Just the one. Don't worry if you lose it. To be honest, you don't need to lock your doors around here.
Well, thanks again. The place is lovely. It's exactly what I hope for.
Ah, well, I'll leave you to it.
Jeffrey opens the front door.
Oh, if you need me, you've got my number. And I live just down the lane. A cottage with a beware of the dog sign. And even though the old girl's been dead these past 5 years and never said boo to a goose.
Well, thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Later, phone in hand, Harper gazes absently out a living room window.
I think I might have splashed out just a little bit too much.
No, it's gorgeous.
Yes, it is. It is the dream country house.
Can you give me the tour? I want to see all of it.
Yeah, can I do it later? I just finished a tour with the owner, Jeffrey. It was quite a character.
Go on.
It was a very, very specific type. Very, very country.
But will you be joining him, grouse shooting tomorrow?
It's perfect.
Harper video chats with a long-haired woman.
He asked about James, actually.
What do you mean, he asked about James? Oh.
I booked it under Mrs. Marlowe, which is strange that I did that. Automatic, I guess.
So what did you tell him?
I didn't tell him anything. I implied I was divorced.
Yeah. Harper.
Stop, I know what you're going to say. I mean, I don't know, but... Look, this kind of thing is going to happen again and again. In one way, it's going to happen my whole life, so... I'm just going to have to get used to it.
But you didn't know what I was going to say. I was going to say, did you know that elephants are the only animal that can't jump? Which is an interesting fact that I needed to share with you.
That is very interesting.
Yeah, and it's...
The woman's image on the display glitches for a moment.
And dressage events definitely took off.
Harper stares, perplexed.
Sorry. Lame.
No, sorry. There's the signal cut out.
Fucking typical. I was being hilarious. So, yeah, I'll see you later.
Yeah, you bet. All right.
Love you.
Bye.
Harper sets her phone face down on the coffee table. Settling back on the couch, she crosses her legs. As she stares off, the scene switches. The bearded man plunges outside the flat while Harper lets out an anguished cry. Back in the country house, Harper unpacks her luggage in the master bedroom. She reaches for a pair of green pajamas.
You're not divorcing me.
Now the bearded man sits in the flat.
You're divorcing how I've been for the past year, I get that. But once I've...
James.
James sits on the foot of the bed while Harper is seated on a couch.
We made promises, Harper, in the church. What promises did we make? If I could know why you married me, then I could subtract what's different about
James,
me now. Yes?
Please.
Sunlight through the window casts him in silhouette.
I'll kill myself.
A lump comes to her throat.
You can't say something like that. You can't say that to me.
I'm saying it. I say it because you will have to live with it. On your conscience.
No. No, James, just please...
Stop saying please, Harper! Stop pleading! I am pleading! I am! Now, I am sorry you will have to live with my death on your conscience, but it's the truth.
You can't give this to me.
You can't say this.
You can't do that. No, James, no, it would be as if you killed yourself and it would be fucking unbearable. That is the last thing I would ever want.
It's not the last thing, because you want to divorce me.
But that's so...
You want to divorce me more than
crazy.
You want to keep me alive. How is my life worth so little
because
to you?
Because I have a life too! I have a fucking life! You're threatening me.
I'm not threatening you. It's not a threat.
No, you're fucking
it's
threatening
a
me and it's fucking
it's
horrible.
A fact.
It tears me apart. But when you threaten me into not divorcing you, that is exactly why we have to get divorced. And I am going to divorce you, okay? I am. Because I can't live. I can't live.
She buries her face in her hands. James watches, heaving a sigh. Back at the country house, Harper takes a hard swallow. Blinking, she wipes her eyes. She sniffles as she steps away with the pajamas. Now wearing a trench coat, she emerges from the house. She uses a long key to lock the front door. Framed through a stone tunnel, she makes her way forward. Then the perspective switches, now showing her tiny figure receding. A wide angle of the area lingers on a narrow stream winding over lush grass. Elsewhere, small blue wildflowers grow at the foot of a tree with moss-covered roots. Harper trudges through the forest undergrowth. She cuts through groves of trees with narrow trunks. Seen from below, she stops at the edge of a steep slope. She glances off and smooths her hair over her ear. Crouching, she braces her hands on the ground as she clambers downhill. She straightens, finding footholds in some cut stumps. Jogging down to flat ground, she gazes off. Now, seen from the top of the sloping hill, she heads off down a pathway. A view frames her dead center as she passes beneath an arbor of curving tree branches forming a tunnel. Beyond, a dense tree line stretches across the horizon. Hands in her pockets, Harper drinks in the unspoiled natural surroundings. She pauses, her attention drawn to something. She gazes down at a tree growing at the bottom of an embankment. She stares intently at the tree, its moss-covered branches jutting out like snaky tendrils from the central trunk. Turning away, Harper continues along the verdant grass. Blinking, she glances upward in mid-stride. She takes a hand from her pocket, palm side up. Smiling, she breaks into a jog. Breaking from the well-trodden path, she takes shelter beneath a tree. With her arms crossed at her waist, she gazes out. She cracks another smile as a gentle breeze rustles the branches around her. She looks up to the tree canopy above, the leaves flitting like butterflies on their branches. Her smile grows wider and she chuckles to herself. She closes her eyes. Now a blurry view frames the narrow, winding path overgrown with foliage. Harper moves in dreamlike slow motion, the greenery coming into sharper focus at her approach. She emerges from the tunnel of overgrowth. She tramps over the mud-soaked path, then comes to a stop. Before her stands the arched entrance to a stone tunnel. She continues over the puddled ground toward the dark passage. At its far end, a pinpoint of greenery appears like a glowing light. She treks to the mouth of the tunnel with measured steps. Silhouetted against the sun-kissed forest background, she calls out. A view from behind slowly draws closer, leaving only Harper staring into the black void. She cups her hands to her mouth. A wide view shows the tunnel ceiling moist with rainwater. A large puddle on the ground reflects the leafy greenery growing just outside. Avoiding the puddled water, Harper proceeds forward. The tunnel mouth framing the greenery, along with its pooled reflection, form a symmetrical ovoid shape in the center of the view. Harper continues along the shadowy passage. She comes to a stop, facing the glow emanating from the exit up ahead. She turns her attention to the ceiling before lifting her hands to her mouth once more. Droplets splash onto the puddle, creating tiny ripples in the reflected greenery. Another droplet adds itself to the puddle. Harper stares forward, lips parted in wonderment. Her form blurs, throwing the light at the end of the tunnel into sharp relief. She stays rooted to the spot, arms at her sides, when a tiny figure appears in the distant archway. The figure turns and faces in her direction. Harper stares uneasily. The figure begins to run toward her. Turning around, Harper starts back the way she came. Harper picks up the pace, keeping her distance from her pursuer. Now she jogs at a brisk clip along the flat ground above the embankment. Later, she hurries along the narrow path cutting through the woods. Seen from the vantage point of the stump-lined slope, she continues along the dirt walkway. She pauses beneath the arbor of curved branches, trying to orient herself. She whips around, then dashes on ahead. Against a blurry background of vegetation, a wispy dandelion spore hovers in the air. Harper bolts forward, then comes to a dead stop. Before her stands another tunnel, its entrance covered by a wall of bricks. Harper plods on, brow knit and lips parted. She gazes up at one of the steep hillsides flanking the tunnel. Pausing, she considers the impenetrable brick wall and the metal door in its center. She glances over her shoulder. She regards the brick wall once more, then begins jogging up the hill. She propels herself upward, pushing off of tree trunks as she goes. She crawls on all fours to another tree. Gripping it tightly, she gains a foothold in the ground and boosts herself to the top of the ascent. She heads along a stretch of flat land, dotted with patches of small blue wildflowers. She braces her hand on a tree trunk as she marches forward. Further on, she plods through denser groves. Emerging, she comes upon two stone cottages in a clearing. Harper shoots a glance back as she approaches the dwellings. She pauses, craning her neck. Patches of lichen cover the building's walls. Harper stares back over her shoulder at a fallen, uprooted tree. Just beyond rests a low, arch-shaped hollow half buried in the ground. With a cautious glance around, Harper heads across the abandoned property. A view from inside one dilapidated cottage frames her as she makes her way to a low wire fence. She clambers over it. Hands in her pockets, she starts across a vast field sprinkled with dandelions toward a distant tree line. An expanse of gray and white clouds fills the sky above. Pausing, Harper closes her eyes and heaves a sigh. She chuckles with a shake of her head, then gazes back at the property beyond the wire fence. She takes her phone from her pocket and composes a shot of the cottages and surrounding landscape. She snaps a picture, then spies a naked man standing beneath one of the trees.
Fuck.
Harper lowers her phone. Arms at his sides, the naked stranger stares in Harper's direction as she trots off. A panoramic vista captures Harper's tiny figure making for the tree line. Beyond the field dotted with dandelions, the stranger continues observing. Elsewhere, birds circle a spire jutting into the gloomy sky. It looms over the Thames River and Tower Bridge on the London skyline. The only soul in sight is a man slumped outside the ground floor of an apartment building. His bare right foot is sprawled on a brick walkway pooled with blood. The sharp finial of a wrought iron gate pierces his left wrist. The view widens to show the blood-stained sleeve of his shirt. A blurry figure approaches along the walkway. Harper comes into focus as she comes upon the gruesome sight. Penetrated by the sharp spike, the victim's arm is cleft nearly in two lengthwise. The view continues down to show James staring lifelessly, his head and face streaked with crimson. Harper stares down in horror at her husband's body, one leg bent and mangled. At the country house, she lies in the bathtub, her wet hair slicked back. She eyes her phone atop a stand. Sitting up, she reaches for it. A text from Riley reads, OMG. Harper sees it's in response to the photo she'd taken of the stone cottages. Her expression grows troubled as she stares at the display. She enlarges the image with her fingers until the naked man beneath the tree becomes visible. She powers off her phone and sets it aside. A pensive look overtakes her features. Daytime, puffy clouds hover over the country house. Clad in the green pajamas, Harper brushes her teeth before a mirror. She spits before wiping her mouth and stepping away. An entryway affords a partial glimpse of the piano in the living room. A sliver of Harper's reflection appears above the keyboard. She takes a seat on the bench. The perspective remains unchanged, spying her from the same fragmentary view. The view slowly pulls closer to the entryway. Clad in an ankle-length pink dress, Harper ignores the sheet music on the stand as she watches her fingers on the keys. An exterior view through a living room window frames her as she plays. Outside, diffused sunlight filters through the top of the apple tree. The light glints off a solitary apple growing on a branch. Beyond the grounds, a shadow passes over lazy, rolling hills. Lily pads float in a pond which starts to ripple. Blue wildflowers grow at the edge of the woods, a gentle breeze rustling their tiny blooms. An image shows tangles of knotty tree trunks. Closer inspection reveals their limbs covered in fine moss. Harper plays on.
Fuck.
She tilts her head, blinking. In the kitchen, she slices a grapefruit in two with a chef's knife and places the halves in a bowl. In the conservatory, she sits before a laptop, chin resting on her hand. She pops in a wireless earpiece before picking up her phone. She places a call, then sets it down.
Hey. Yeah, good. I'm just going through the figures you just sent over. The revisions, yeah. I just wanted to double-check a couple of things.
Seen through the glass doors behind her, a naked man strolls through the garden unnoticed.
Yeah, but sorry, we can't offer them that deal if the figures are correct. Our margins disappear.
He pauses and stares inside.
Margins. Yeah.
As he makes his way over, Harper steps away from the table. In the kitchen, she fills her cup from a coffee pot. Reflected in the glass, the intruder cocks his bald head.
Okay, call the suppliers and check. Bye.
Harper returns to the conservatory and types on her laptop. She answers a video call from Riley.
Hey.
Hi. I'm ready for that tour you promised me.
Now?
Yeah, it's perfect timing.
Who for?
Come on, Harper.
Okay.
Harper stands.
This place is pretty cool.
She turns around.
So, here's the garden.
Conservatory. Love it.
She takes no notice of the intruder through the glass pane.
The kitchen.
Red walls. That's bold.
Very.
That works. Shaker. Aga.
I know.
She shows off the kitchen tile work.
Ever so gently into the east wing. You'll notice the beautiful patina on the flagstone floor. Low oak beams.
Of course.
And here we have a generously proportioned living room. Open wood fire. Comfortable sofas. And a baby grand.
Wow. Do you play piano?
I do, actually.
Love that wallpaper. Those windows.
Oh, sunlit aspect. And look, check out the view of the...
Harper catches sight of the intruder studying the apple tree.
I'll call you back.
What?
Harper stares, brow knit and lips parted. The naked man lowers a branch and fingers it. Harper looks down at her phone. Phone to her ear, she watches him pluck an apple.
999, which service you require?
Police.
Please explain the reason for calling.
There's an intruder in my garden, a man. He isn't wearing any clothes, and I think he might be stalking me.
She ducks out of sight, then he steps away.
It's a village, Cotson. C-O-T-S-O.
Hertfordshire.
She looks out the window to find him gone.
Yeah.
Does the house have any distinguishing features?
Features? My car. My car's parked outside. It's a blue Ford Fiesta registration. CK61LZF.
Stepping into the foyer, she spies the front door open a crack.
Explain what's happening, please.
She inches toward it. She picks up the key.
Can you explain what's happening, please?
Noticing movement through the gap, she halts. As the door starts to move, she runs over, slams, and locks it.
Police car has been dispatched. Please stay on the line.
I am staying on the line.
The door's mail slot opens. A hand reaches through.
He's trying to get in.
Police are on their way. There's a car in your area.
The hand withdraws from the slot. Harper drops her phone. The view switches to the London flat, where James upends a nightstand in the bedroom. Harper texts Riley, "He's really scaring me." As she starts to compose another message, James emerges from the hallway and snatches her phone. He steps away, studying the display. He turns to meet his wife's gaze.
I'm scaring you.
Yeah, you are.
You scare me? As you don't understand that. As you make yourself into the fucking victim, you scare
James,
me.
Look, I don't want either of us to be scared of the other.
But what you're saying, I do want that.
No, I'm not saying that.
No, what does this say?
He shows her the phone.
It says he's really scaring me.
As the lock screen appears, James presses a button.
What have you said to that bitch, Riley?
Saying.
I'm not caring.
No.
I'm not.
No.
What are you trying to hide from me?
He steps forward.
It's my phone.
He lowers the phone, then slugs her in the face. She tumbles back onto the kitchen floor. Outside the country house, Harper watches solemnly as male and female police officers apprehend the prone intruder in the garden. Abrasions cover his jowly face and bald head.
Kate, let's get him up.
One cop eyes Harper.
Don't let my friend.
Later, inside.
So you don't know who he is?
Well, he wasn't carrying any ID, that's for sure. Looks like he's been sleeping rough.
I saw him yesterday.
The cop looks up from her notes.
Well, I know, I think he followed me out of the woods.
Which woods?
Oh, God, I don't know the area. I was on a walk. It was the forest just over the fields.
Oh, Cotswolds, with the old railway line. Yeah, that's probably where he was sleeping.
Fist clenched, Harper studies the policewoman.
Look, it must have been very frightening. I do understand. But honestly, I think he's harmless. He didn't resist at all. Seemed a bit confused, bit of a nut, you know?
Right, yeah.
He stinks to high heaven, though. That man is definitely in need of a wash. I'm not looking forward to driving him to the station.
Well, just glad you're nearby.
Me too.
I don't know, they came really quickly. It's just bloody lucky, because I bet their response time can be really slow out here.
In the drawing room, Harper talks on the phone.
Please let me come up.
No.
Harper, for fuck's sake.
Well, for fuck's sake, yourself. I didn't come here to be afraid, Riley.
What are you trying to prove? This isn't about being weak.
Yeah, it isn't. But it was just some weirdo, okay? And the police said he wasn't dangerous, and they've got him now anyway, so end of story. Look, it's a quiet, pretty village in a beautiful countryside. I'm going to do a bit more work, and then I'm going to have a wander around. There's an old church nearby, and apparently the pub's nice, so.
With a cock of her head, Riley gives a tentative nod.
Okay.
Okay.
A distant view shows centuries-old buildings scattered around the countryside. Tombstones line a cemetery under the shade of leafy trees. Passing the grave markers, Harper heads up a paved path toward a church. She enters the otherwise empty place of worship. She stands facing a stained glass altarpiece. She glances around, then starts down the center aisle of the nave. She passes beneath shafts of light streaming in at downward angles from windows set high in the walls. She approaches the back of the church. Before the altar stands a stone baptismal font with faceted sides. The front side features a man's stylized carved portrait. Out of Harper's view, the font's backside features another figure. Harper studies the male portrait's hair and beard, resembling veiny leaves. As she does, we see the backside portrait, a female figure with prominent breasts. The carving depicts the woman squatting, with her hands held close to her genitalia. Harper stands silhouetted against the stained glass altarpiece, Jesus flanked by a quartet of other figures. Turning away from the iconography, Harper peers down the nave. She steps over to a side-facing pew closest to the altar. She slowly sinks into her seat. She stares off solemnly while, behind her, light filters in through a stained glass panel. She recalls sitting sprawled on the kitchen floor in her flat.
What was that, James? Your plan to win me back? Get out.
She rises.
Get out.
Tearing the phone from his hand, she shoves him.
Get out! Get out! Get out! Get out! No,
I'm sorry!
No, you want to fucking apologize! You want to threaten to kill yourself? Don't bother, I don't give a fuck! It'll make no difference because whatever you say, whatever you do, you will never, ever see me again. Now get the...
She shoves him out.
Fuck out!
She slams the door, then thumps the wooden railing in front of her and lets out an anguished wail. A view lingers on the male face on the baptismal font. Seen in profile, Harper racks with sobbing. A figure approaches along the nave. Harper bows her head against the railing. Wearing clerical robes, the newcomer stands under the angelic shafts of light. A view from below captures Harper's grimace as she weeps. A circular aura of light descends, enveloping the vicar. As he steps away, black shadow falls over the carved male portrait. On the other side, an intense orange glow highlights the female figure. The view switches from Harper sobbing in the flat to the present as she hunches in the pew, face buried in her hands. Composing herself, she wipes her face and smooths her hair back, then gets to her feet. As she steps through a side exit, a faint light shines on the baptismal font. Outside, Harper heads down a path of stepping stones. As a seated figure comes into focus from the church steps, Harper pauses. The seated man wears a plastic mask of a woman's face with yellow hair and full red lips.
Hello.
He stays seated.
Who are you?
I'm Harper.
He takes off the mask, revealing his boyish face.
Want to play a game?
She stares back, arms crossed.
Hide and seek. You hide, I'll seek.
I don't think I can.
You can't hide.
The vicar steps over.
Go on. I bet you're good at it. And I'm good at seeking.
I'm just not in the mood to play a game right now. Sorry.
Samuel. Go home. Leave the lady alone.
No, I want to play a game with her.
She's told you perfectly clearly she doesn't feel like it. Perhaps you will later, but not right now.
Why don't you fuck off?
You first.
Scowling, Samuel stretches the mask's elastic strap and puts it back over his face. He shuffles down the steps before turning to Harper.
Stupid bitch.
He stomps off.
Do apologize. Samuel is a deeply troubled boy.
I live in London. I'm used to kids swearing at me. Not so used to them swearing at vicars, but...
Yes, but, one thing, do you mind?
What?
You're in pain, yes?
Sorry?
I noticed you just now in the church, sitting in the pews. And... At first I thought you were praying, but then I realized you weren't praying. You're tormented. I didn't approach, but of course I should have. So, I am now. Do you think I could help?
Sporting shoulder-length gray hair, he gazes earnestly.
I don't know if I'm tormented exactly, but...
But?
It feels more like...
Harper knits her brow.
Haunted.
Yeah.
He turns away, nodding.
Let's sit a while.
They share a bench not far from the gravestones.
I had a row with my husband. We were separating. This was by far the worst.
He holds his hands in his lap while she keeps her arms folded.
And something happened. He hit me.
Glancing over, the vicar hunches forward.
He'd never done that before. I screamed at him. I was so angry. I made him leave, threw him out, locked the door, wouldn't let him back in. And apparently what happened next was he pushed his way into the flat upstairs, went to their balcony, tried to climb down to ours, but he slipped. Or...
She shakes her head.
Or let himself go.
She cracks a wry smile, then her expression grows morose.
I honestly don't know.
She blinks her eyes shut.
Sifa passed, I was looking out. And he was looking in.
She opens them in a fixed stare.
And it felt like we could see each other. But... Well, I'm not even sure if that's possible.
She faces the vicar.
Could he see me? Is he fellow? It happened so quickly, but I think he did. And that's what haunts me.
Harper stares off soberly.
I see.
The vicar gazes in contemplation.
If I may, I think you need to be understood. And I do understand.
He sets his hand on her leg.
I can fully imagine it must be dreadful for you.
Harper keeps her legs crossed.
And inevitably you also feel an awful sense of guilt. And that haunts you too. The seared snapshot image. Why, yes, you carry it. You see it when you close your eyes, but also you ask yourself repeatedly, what if? If only.
She scrunches her mouth.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
She shoots the vicar a brief glance, then faces away and swallows a lump in her throat. He takes his hand from her thigh and folds his hands in his lap.
It's the screaming.
Blinking, Harper shakes her head.
He wasn't screaming.
No, yours.
She faces him, her lips curling into a frown.
You must wonder why you drove him to it.
She stares at him, brow creased.
Why, I didn't drive him to it.
He turns in her direction.
Well, after he struck you, did you give him a chance to apologize?
What?
Did he?
Harper blinks in bewilderment.
No,
Men do strike women, sometimes. It's not nice, but it's not a capital offense.
What?
Do you prefer things to be comfortable or true?
He shifts to face her.
Might it be true that if you'd given him the chance to apologize, he'd still be alive.
Eyelids fluttering, she bares her teeth.
Fuck off.
She gets up and storms off.
Aren't these the questions you
asked? Fuck off!
Leaning back on the bench, the vicar takes a small tube from his pocket. He uncaps it, then proceeds to apply lip balm. Eyes cast heavenward, he sucks air in through his teeth. His hand settles onto the spot on the bench where Harper had sat. His ring finger teasingly pokes into the gap between two wooden slats. In a forest clearing, a deer lies motionless in a shallow depression. A close view shows its tongue hanging from its mouth. A drifting dandelion spore floats into the animal's eye socket. A perspective plunges into the black, tunnel-like hollow. In the church, light shines on the baptismal font's female portrait. Fading up from shadow, the male portrait appears. A receding perspective takes in the deer in the woods, maggots wriggling around its matted fur. The drab gray of the surroundings nearly camouflages the decomposing animal's face. Seen in full, the deer appears like a carved relief on the forest floor. In an arch-shaped alcove, the naked man straightens in a meditative pose. Seated cross-legged among some seedlings growing up from the ground, he lifts a hand to his forehead. Face obscured by shadow, he trembles slightly, his hand lingering at his brow. In the church, a view pulls back from the baptismal font toward the nave. Meanwhile, the naked man holds open a gash on his brow while inserting a leaf into the wound, stem first. Blood drips down his forehead to his jowly cheeks. Seen from different perspectives, the sun shines through trees, pulses halo-like over a field, and peeks through a cloud-streaked horizon. Evening finds Jeffrey doing a crossword puzzle in a village pub.
P.O. P.O. something. Gee, come on, Jeffrey, fire up the engines.
He stares off.
Ah! Pomegranate. Very good.
Two men share a table near the door as Harper enters. One turns to look as she joins Jeffrey at the bar.
Ah! Miss Marlowe. Come paint the village red, eh?
I just want a drink.
Yeah, I know the feeling well.
A jowly bartender approaches.
Will it be, miss?
Vodka tonic.
Honestly. Oh, yeah, let me get it.
No.
They reach for their wallets.
I've got it.
Please. Franklin, our money's no good here.
Oh, you are. It seems that you don't have legal tender.
Thank you.
Just chalk it up.
One of the men glares over from the table.
Settled in, okay? No gremlins? I saw you at the church a little while ago. You found the stained glass window. You know, at dawn, the sun shines straight through. It's miraculous. You can be bathed in light. Been for a walk yet? No railway line. Yeah, you can stand there and imagine the steam trains as
oi
they...
to the oi!
Pass through the woods.
Hello, Jimmy. Right, Jeff. Point.
The policeman stops by.
Evening, ma'am. Oh, I hope you're feeling okay now. Not too rattled.
Fine, thanks.
You heard about that business at your rental?
My rental? What business?
Yeah, intruder on the property. Or on the grounds, anyway.
Well, surely not.
Some bloke, not a stitch of clothing on it.
Goodness me. When the cat's away, eh?
No.
It's care of the community type. Stalkers and bonkers.
That's him. Sounds like you know the guy, Jeff.
Stop it.
Do you find out who he is?
Oh, some gippo, I dare say.
Maybe.
I'm so sorry, Miss Marlowe.
No, it's not your fault, Jeffrey.
Well, it must have been awful for you.
It was. But they have him now, so.
Adam. Had to release the bugger about an hour ago.
What? You released him?
Yeah. I had to let him go.
Why?
Not much to charge him with, miss. It's not like he stole anything. Just one of your apples, Jeff.
Scrumpy! Hang him!
Now, we gave him a jacket and trousers from lost property, sent him packing.
He was stalking me.
What makes you say that?
I saw him twice.
You saw him twice? I don't know if he saw you once. It's not quite stalking, is it?
He followed me out of the woods, then tried to break into the house.
If you see him again, give us a shout.
Watching incredulously as the policeman sips his beer, Harper heads for the door.
You're leaving?
Jeffrey cringes. Outside, Harper makes her way briskly past the gravestones in the churchyard as she strides down a pathway. She halts, her expression troubled. She starts back the way she came, only to stop again. She stares off into the darkness, her brow knit. She turns once more and continues on her way, this time at a brisk jog. As she passes the churchyard, a figure appears in shadow beneath a tree, staring in her direction. A closer view from behind reveals him as the bald intruder. Harper returns to the house, two lamps shining in the foyer. She shuts and locks the door. She sets the key down on an accent table. As she steps away, the view lingers on the front door. The porch light goes out. Harper appears framed through a window as she turns on the drawing room lamps. Phone in hand, she takes a seat on the couch.
Come on, please pick up. Come on.
Riley's face pops on screen.
Don't tell me there's more.
There's more.
What the fuck?
I went for a walk. I meet a boy in a churchyard who tells me I'm a stupid bitch. Then I meet a vicar who tells me that I drove James to kill himself. Then I meet a policeman who tells me that they just released a naked weirdo who tried to break into the house yesterday. And I'm done. I'm done. I'm just going to get in the car and go home.
Fuck this.
Yeah.
No, fuck this. Fuck this shit. That house was the one thing that you wanted for yourself, what you chose as a place to heal, and now you have to give it up because of some motherfucking... No. How long did you say the drive was? 3 hours away?
4.
Great, I'm gonna do it in 3. And you and me, we're gonna have a good fucking time. We are. We're gonna go on walks, and we're gonna eat roast dinners and ice cream, and I'm gonna watch you get pissed in the evenings, and if that fucking weirdo comes back, I'm gonna take that axe and chop his dick off, and he can fucking choke on it.
What axe?
Behind you.
Harper eyes the fireplace.
So do we do it? Just 5 minutes for me to stick some shit in a bag and I'll rag it up the motorway.
Okay.
So what's the address?
Seen through the window.
Hang on a second.
She enters the living room.
Okay.
She turns on a lamp near the piano, sheds her overcoat, and opens the welcome packet.
Have you got a pen?
Yes.
Okay. The village is called Cotson, and the postcode is HL893XR. The house is called Cotson Manor.
The video feed glitches, then cuts out.
One.
Harper reconnects.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Did you get any of that?
No.
Okay, the village is called Cotson, C-O-T-S-O-N, and the postcode is HL89.
The video cuts out again. A light outside flickers on, then goes out. The light from the phone shines. A text from Riley reads, "Just message me it."
Right.
Harper attaches a My Location link. A response reads, I already know where you are. You stupid bitch. Harper gazes off, disconcerted. Outside, the fixtures on the house's facade blink, then stay on. Setting her phone on the coffee table, Harper gets to her feet. Through a window, she eyes a bright pinpoint of light in the distance. She takes a step closer. A glass pane frames a figure staring back from the garden. It's the policeman, his uniform discernible in the shadow. Harper steps onto the porch. The cop hangs back near the apple tree.
What is it? What's happened?
She draws closer.
What are you doing here? Does he come back?
The policeman just stares.
Why aren't you replying?
All goes black. As the lights return, he's nowhere to be seen. In slow motion, an apple drops and bounces on the lawn, then dozens of apples fall from the branches. Lips parted, Harper backs away. Another exterior light turns off. It turns on, revealing a man heading straight for her through the box hedges. She rushes inside, slams the door in his face, and locks it.
Why are you doing this?
As the mail slot flips open and closed, the exterior lights of the house flicker, then stay on. At the threshold of the kitchen, Harper spies movement outside. She ducks down, peering through a glass door. She turns away, chest rising and falling with her breathing. Keeping low, she scurries off and takes cover behind the kitchen island, then peeks over. She fumbles for a chef's knife on the black marble top and manages to slide it into her grasp. One hand clutching the counter's edge, she regards the blade in her other hand. A light goes out. Harper's hand slips from the countertop. She flinches, knife at the ready. A glass pane shatters. She scoots along the kitchen floor, her back pressed to the cabinets. A stool slides along the floor past the kitchen island. As she scrambles for cover, the stool is drawn from view. Harper keeps in a low crouch before scrambling to her feet. She hurries backward into the hallway, her back to a wall with the blade pointed out. She whips around to the front door.
I have a weapon! I said I have a weapon! If you come in here, I'm going to use it!
Miss Lala, what on earth are you talking about?
Jeffrey opens the door and enters the foyer.
What the hell is going on? I heard screaming and then a window break.
There was someone. Someone tried to break in.
Was it that bloody man? Has he come back?
No, don't!
He switches on the kitchen light. Glancing outside briefly, he turns his attention to the floor.
Oh, God.
A crow lies on its back, twitching on the tiles, which are covered in glass shards.
Oh, you poor thing.
As he crouches, Harper checks over her shoulder.
Oh, so sorry, old girl. Oh, don't look, Miss Marlin.
Gripping the bird, he twists its neck and sets the body on the kitchen island.
Sorry about that. The broken wing, you see. Nothing to be done. But I quite understand why it gave you a fright.
But there was someone outside. Tried to get in, tried to kick the door in.
Who?
The policeman.
What?
I saw the policeman and another man. I'm not making this up.
Miss Marlowe, you don't strike me as a liar. I believe you. After all, it's already happened once today, no? And, as your landlord, it now falls on me to have a good look around. Clear all this up.
No, Geoffrey, don't go outside.
No, nonsense. Damsel in distress, I'm just a fellow.
Geoffrey, don't!
He turns with a toothy grin.
You have precisely the qualities of a failed military man.
What?
Father told me that. I was only 7 years old. Time you showed him what's what, eh?
Geoffrey ambles outside and pauses for a look around. All goes black.
Geoffrey?
He waves his arms, triggering a sensor.
Sped up.
He gives Harper two thumbs up.
All clear here.
He steps away. She walks through the doorway onto the front walk. Geoffrey continues across the sprawling grounds. Harper hangs back a ways. He crosses past a row of manicured shrubs while Harper watches from a distance. Near a flight of stone steps, he cups a hand to his mouth.
Look here. Whoever's out there, I don't know what you think you're playing at, but it's not going to sit well with me. Not one bit. You hear?
An aerial view takes in the yard as Harper gazes across at Geoffrey.
Seems to me like they might have got.
The lights flicker off. They turn back on, showing Harper standing face to face with the naked intruder. Her breath catches in her throat while she backs away. The intruder follows her onto the lawn, where Harper stops in her tracks. Head and shoulders studded with thorns jutting from the flesh, the intruder inhales deeply. He crouches and blows dandelion spores from his palm. In slow motion, the spores spread out toward Harper, who watches, arms at her sides. The cotton-like spores hover in the air around the seemingly catatonic woman. Eyes closed, Harper tilts her head back. She parts her lips and a spore floats into her mouth. Arms spread at her sides, she lets the countless other seedlings glide past. The view switches to Harper lying underwater in the bathtub, her mouth open wide. Her open-mouthed wail continues as she sits in her flat, staring across at the male portrait on the baptismal font. Harper appears briefly running through the woods in slow motion. In the garden, the dandelion spores drift past the intruder. A dark pall falls over the baptismal font, first the male portrait, then the female. The carved male face appears at the foot of the bed in the country house, then Harper rushes headlong to the door in the tunnel's brick wall. The carved female portrait gazes out from the foot of the bed before Harper sleepwalks through the garden into the house. The naked stranger watches as she turns in the foyer and reaches for the door. Just before she shuts it fully, a flashback to the flat shows her slamming the apartment door closed. In the country house, light flickers through the open mail slot, revealing the bald intruder peering through the narrow opening. The flickering light falls on Harper, who stares back numbly. The intruder reaches through the slot with his left hand. A view from below shows blood streaking the limb from fingers to forearm.
Fingers splayed, the hand turns palm side up. Regarding the outstretched hand, Harper slowly reaches toward it. The view switches. Now seen over Harper's shoulder, the hand draws ever closer to the stranger's. A perspective briefly shows Harper upside down. As it switches back to right side up, the stranger grabs for her wrist. Harper's gaping mouth lets out a wail. Gripping the chef's knife in her free hand, she lifts it overhead, then plunges it into his forearm. Trembling, she lets go of the handle. Suddenly, the arm jerks back. With the knife handle pressed against the frame of the mail slot, the blade begins to cut through the flesh of the intruder's arm. Dripping from the deep gash, blood stains the door below the slot. An eerie light pulses as the blade slices the flesh further toward the hand. Harper stares with a sickly expression. The blade glides through the wrist into the soft flesh of the palm. It slices in between two fingers. The knife clatters onto the floor as the hand slips from view. Harper stares, horrified. Reaching down, she retrieves the knife. She straightens, eyes locked on the floor. She backs up hesitantly beneath the oak wood beams in the foyer. Gazing over her shoulder, she turns the knife in her tight grip. A view of the kitchen island shows the blonde-haired mask moving to and fro, seemingly on its own. The black marble top comes into focus, revealing a dead crow spread-eagled atop it, with the mask covering the bird's head. Gripping the bird's wings with one uninjured arm and the other split lengthwise from the fingers to the elbow, Samuel drags the crow across the kitchen island. Blood stains his dress shirt while he wears a child-sized necktie. As he pulls ever so gently, the mask tilts and straightens over the bird. Samuel lifts his gaze and peers across the room. Harper stares back, silhouetted at the entrance.
You really hurt me.
Harper shifts on her feet. Samuel steps from behind the island. He's the size of a boy. He holds his left arm out at his side, the digits on the mangled halves jutting like tree branches.
Look what you did.
Stay away from me.
She points the knife out.
What are you going to do now? Hurt me again? Stab me again? You're so mean. You wouldn't even play a game of hide and seek. But I think you will now.
I will fucking cut you.
Fingering the edge of the countertop, he approaches.
I'll do it.
I don't think you will.
He steps closer until the knife point presses against his chest. Harper backs away but keeps the blade raised. A spill of light reveals Samuel's cold, disdainful expression. Harper backs into the hallway, lowering the knife.
But he probably should. It'll be the last chance you get.
She slams a door in his face.
Good. So you hide. I'll count to 10.
1. 2.
Harper leans against the door.
3. 4.
You should be finding somewhere to hide. I know where you are.
5. 6. 7. Hey.
She gulps.
Ready or not, here I go.
She whips around to see another man bursting through the front door. She races upstairs while he pursues her, then she slams the bathroom door in his face. Leaning forward, she braces both hands against it. She takes her hands away, one still gripping the knife, and waits expectantly. Seen in profile, she withdraws from the door, past the wall, painted blood red. Gaze fixed on the door, she pauses beside the bathtub. Her chest heaves up and down as she watches the door latch lifting. It swings open part way. The vicar pops his head in. He exhales, shutting his eyes for a moment. As he closes the door, Harper takes a hard swallow. He turns, and they size each other up from across the room.
A shudder in the loins engenders there. The broken wall, the burning roof and tower, and Agamemnon. Dead.
He blinks his eyes closed, then bows his head as he makes his way to the sink. He rinses dried blood from his left hand, split in two between the middle and ring fingers. He grabs a towel to dry the mutilated limb.
What the fuck are you?
His gaze meets hers through the mirror's glass.
A swan.
Turning, he looks her in the eye as he leans against the sink.
When did you lose your virginity?
She stares back, lips parted.
What?
I'm asking you at what age you lost your virginity. I've been thinking about it. I have pictured you. Legs open.
His gaze drifts down.
Vagina open.
His eyes return to hers.
Mouth open. I have decided that you are an expert in carnality. Someone who has explored all the things that they can do and have done to them.
His mouth droops into a grimace.
These things now exist in my mind.
Harper gulps.
This is your power. This is the control that you exert.
She regards the clergyman, whose lips twitch with agitation.
I must be one that cannot win. Yet lost were I not one. For beauty hath been created to undo.
His gaze darts to Harper.
Or be undone.
Staring fixedly, he inches forward. She takes a step back. Eyes closed, the vicar shakes his head.
You are singing to me.
He trembles as he considers her.
Not as Ulysses, but as Sailor. To dash me to pieces.
He closes the distance between them.
On the rocks of this.
He kneels and grabs the front of her dress.
These rocks. This cave. This slit. This. What is it?
As she lifts the point of the knife to his throat, his grin fades.
Yes. Exactly.
Staring into her eyes, he grips her wrist and boosts himself to his feet. Harper shudders. The vicar places his mutilated hand around her neck, three digits on one side, two on the other. Eyes shut, he turns her in place. He begins to march her across the room. He pins her against the sink, then forces her to perch atop it. With her head pressed to the mirror, he leans forward. Harper's legs clench tightly around his. Reaching up with his uninjured hand, he runs his fingers through her hair. He strokes her cheek, and she slowly turns to face him. As she straightens, the vicar lets out a faint gasp. She buries the knife blade deep in his torso. She kicks him back against a side table, and he falls in slow motion. As he settles onto his side, she takes her leave. A receding view frames Harper, who rounds a corner into the hallway. She stumbles, bracing her hands on the walls as she goes. Outside, light is cast upon the apple tree, all its fruit littering the ground. Harper dashes through the garden in dreamy slow motion past the tree. The scene returns to her bolting down the hall, then shows her getting into her car on the driveway. Back inside, she stands in the hallway, studying her blood-stained hand. As she negotiates the winding driveway of the estate, the view cuts back once again to show her crawling in slow motion down the hall. Back on her feet, she tugs at her fingers before setting something aside. On the driveway, she weaves around curves, only to find Jeffrey standing dead ahead. Her car barrels into him, then skids to a stop. Eyes wide with terror, she gazes into the side mirror. Jeffrey labors to all fours, then staggers to his feet. The side mirror captures Harper's cautious expression as he limps over. He opens the driver's door, blood streaking his brow.
Miss Marley.
He yanks her outside by her hair with his right hand, his left hand mutilated.
Mrs. Marlowe!
He shoves her onto the driveway. He stands looming over Harper while she lies helplessly on her back, bathed in red light. He gets behind the wheel of her car. As the vehicle peels out, she manages to sit up. The red taillights fade as the car disappears into the night. Harper struggles to her feet and stares off into the shadows beyond. The perspective slowly rises, taking in a milky white nebula in the star-dotted cosmos. Head tilted back, Harper pivots as she studies the canopy of space above her. She pauses, her expression grown solemn. Several shooting stars zip past the heavenly expanse. She turns her head to see the glow of approaching headlights. She starts back to the house. Behind the wheel of her car, Jeffrey unleashes a maniacal scream. At top speed, Harper runs through the entrance gates of the house with the car quickly closing distance. She ducks into an alley between buildings. The car skids to a stop, headlights illuminating her look of abject terror. She resumes her flight toward the house, shooting the narrow gap between brick pillars. The car barrels headlong into one, smashing its front end. Safe for the moment, Harper stands in the garden with her back turned to the headlights' glow. She crumples forward onto her hands and knees among the scattered apples. Silhouetted against the distant, flickering house lights, she appears in profile with her head pressed to the ground. A shadow of an approaching figure passes over the garden. Unnoticed, the figure stops in the gap between hedgerows. Harper slowly lifts her head from the ground and turns in his direction. The intruder watches her from between the hedges, his left arm bisected from fingers to elbow. Brow knit perplexedly, Harper regards him with a fixed stare. A closer view shows his face now completely covered in leaves. Small branches protrude from his skull like deer's antlers, while thorns jut from his shoulders. He takes a step forward. He falters, his right foot snapping at the ankle. Under Harper's gaze, he drops onto all fours. He crumples forward, revealing his bulging belly. A bilious, stringy liquid drips from his mouth. He straightens, open-mouthed. A wide view shows Harper and the intruder sprawled at either side of the tree, the man's belly growing more swollen. Hands braced behind him, he shifts on the ground. He opens his mouth wide, then a view between his legs shows his anus opening like a vagina as a baby's head begins to crown. Harper just stares, watching him rear his head back. She labors to her feet, standing up straight. Blood and mucus cover the newborn, who's expelled face down onto the grass, broad shoulders stretching the birth canal. The intruder reclines flat. His progeny, an adolescent male, tries to boost himself up using his mutilated left hand. Harper shrinks back. The newborn drags himself toward her. She backs away hesitantly as he crawls over the apple-strewn ground. Propped up on his elbows, he makes his way closer. The exterior light flickers on. Harper gasps upon seeing Samuel's face staring back. Sporting a pregnant belly, he straightens onto his knees and lets out a wail. His head back, then drops supine with his legs spread wide. A vagina-shaped cavity opens in his navel, and an adult newborn's head begins to pass from it. A membranous sac tears away, revealing the offspring's full head of gray hair. The vicar's head emerges from his father, his mangled left arm pressed to his body. His gaze falls on Harper, who stays rooted to the spot. The birth canal stretches like rubber as the vicar pulls free of it. As he starts to rise, Harper turns away. She makes for the house while he stares after her, half-birthed from his father. Leaving the front door open, Harper wanders numbly through the foyer. Framed through the doorway, the vicar drags his knuckles as he approaches. Back turned to him, Harper waits expectantly. He reaches the threshold of the house, his shadowy figure an indistinct blur. He struggles to stand upright. Harper calmly turns around. A few feet away, the vicar lifts his head. Under Harper's pitiful gaze, he crawls closer, dragging his pregnant belly with him. He crumples forward, head pressed to the floor. A birth canal appears between his shoulder blades. A head begins to emerge from it. The vicar rocks forward and back, squeezing his child's head out further. Arms at her sides, Harper looks on. Covered in glistening fluid, the newborn slides from his father's womb. The vicar slumps, motionless. Harper takes a single step back, but stays put. Floppy hair slicked down with fluid, Jeffrey flashes a toothy grin. Propped on the elbow of his mangled left arm, he grabs for an umbrella stand, which falls. He plants his right hand on an accent table and starts to rise on his broken right ankle. He slips on the afterbirth covering the tiles. Harper backs away as he gains his feet. His body racks with laughing sobs. Right hand braced on the doorway, he gazes pleadingly at Harper, who shuts her eyes. She turns and steps away. She enters the drawing room. Jeffrey's head jolts back. Making her way to the hearth, Harper picks up the axe near the firewood. She stands straight, head held high. A foot begins to emerge from Jeffrey's ever-widening mouth. He supports himself in the doorway as a second foot joins the first. Blood covering his distended belly, Jeffrey heaves as he begins expelling the newborn's legs. Drooping from the weight, he drops his hands from the doorway and collapses into the foyer. Harper's breath catches in her throat. The drawing room blurs out while the entryway to the foyer comes into sharp focus. A figure staggers over, covered in blood. A closer view shows James's bearded face. The spouses share a long look across the room. With his left arm split lengthwise to the elbow, he braces his right on a cabinet as he stumbles over. He sinks onto the couch and leans against a cushion with his head tilted back. Harper steps over and sits beside him. Gripping the axe handle near the blade, she rests it on her lap while he looks up at the ceiling.
Look at me, Harper.
They turn to face one another.
So I died. My arm was ripped free by an iron railing. My ankle snapped. My internal organs crushed. This is what he did.
Under his insistent gaze, Harper blinks.
James. What is it that you want from me?
Your love.
They stare into each other's eyes. Harper blinks. Her expression softening a bit, she turns away.
Yeah.
She stares into space, then bows her head and shuts her eyes. She rubs a finger along the axe blade, then lifts her gaze into another absent stare. A title appears in red capital letters on a black background. Men. Daytime, an SUV pulls onto the grounds of the country house. Harper's car sits on the driveway, its front end smashed near the pile of bricks from the broken pillar. The SUV's driver's door opens and a woman emerges. It's Riley, who turns to gaze over at the wreck. She marches between hedgerows toward the house, the folds of her trench coat billowing behind her. Spying the open front door, she stops and sweeps her gaze around. Harper sits on a flight of stone steps in the distance, with her knees drawn up to her chest. Pregnant belly bulging under her dress, Riley observes her friend. Harper studies a tiny leaf that she twiddles between her fingers.
Have your eyes really seen?
Lifting her gaze in Riley's direction, she blinks and breaks into a toothy smile. Cut to black. Titles appear as dandelion spores drift across a hazy, dimly lit space. Written and directed by Alex Garland. Jesse Buckley.
No other way.
Rory Kinnear.
Really up to you.
Papa Esiedu. Gail Rankin.
Love is the key we must.
Produced by Andrew McDonald, Alan Reich.
Truth is the flame.
Co-producer Cal Bannon. Director of Photography, Rob Hardy, ASC, BSC. Production designer, Mark Digby. Editor, Jake Roberts, ACE. Music by Ben Salisbury, Jeff Barrow. Visual effects supervisor, David Simpson. Set director, Michelle Day. Costume designer, Lisa Duncan. Makeup designer, Nicole Stafford. Sound design supervising sound editor, Glenn Fremantle. Casting by Carmel Cochran. The drifting spores create a tunnel-like space as they come together, finally converging to form a dandelion head in the center of the frame.
Love is what we came here for.
Credits roll.
No one could offer you more. Do you know what I mean? Have your eyes really seen? Do you know what I mean? Have your eyes really seen? Do you know what I mean? Have your eyes really seen? Do you know?
Copyright 2022, Men Film Rights, LLC. All rights reserved. Men Film Rights, LLC is the author of this motion picture for the purpose of copyright and other laws. This motion picture photoplay is protected pursuant to the provisions of the laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication and/or distribution of this photoplay may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. This film has been described by Deluxe with funding by A24. Voice by Laura Post. Neon orange letters spell DNA. Rainbow colors streak across shapes as they slide into place to form A24.